So we are holding on Samach Zayin Amud Aleph, just about the middle of the Amud. The line begins Samacha. Okay, so the last thing we learned yesterday, we've been talking about the whole concept of Asmachta. The last thing we had was the case of a guy who buys a field, who sends a shliach to buy a field from his relative. The seller wants to have the option to be able to buy it back afterwards, and the shliach says a non-committal thing, you guys are relatives, your mustam will be able to work it out. So we discussed, does that mean that it amounted to an asmachta, and therefore you don't really have a valid kinyan, or does it amount to maybe fakir, maybe it amounts to that it is in fact a t'nai gomer, and therefore if she doesn't end up selling it back to him later, then it means the sale was never a valid sale in the first place.
Let me ask you a question. Did asmachta exist, the concept, before Matan Torah?
I suppose it's a sensible thing. I suppose it existed, yeah. Okay. You always had people exaggerate, right? Yeah. Okay. All right. So the question is like this. Okay, so we established yesterday then that, fine, because there was this lack of smichus das, therefore there was no kinyan. Okay, the question is, hadra pay. So we said ara hadra. We said, okay, then there's no question the land ends up going back because there was only an asmachta according to the understanding. Again, if the Rambam thought that there was just an asmachta over here, well, then fine. There was never any valid kinyan.
It was a retroactive asmachta.
Well, that's what it means. In other words, it turned out there was an asmachta because he expected to be able to buy it back, and we don't know whether there was anything definitive about that. So, perimai, what happens to the peris of that field? Do we say ribith tzutzahavu? Do we say, well, if we're saying that there was no sale here, it means, in effect, what we had here was a loan disguised as a sale.
Well, wait a minute. We're saying there's no sale when she decides not to.
Not when she decides not to, because in the first place, he had the smichus das that he's not fully being machne, because he doesn't know whether she's going to be willing to sell back or not. Therefore, there was a lack of kinyan. He's not fully being machne, because he intends
money
to buy it back. Money
exchanged,
but no field.
Well,
so therefore, effectively, no property exchanged hands because there was no sale.
Right.
So it's effectively, it's a loan disguised as a sale. So therefore, what happens to the payers? Ribis, there's no question it's ribis if he eats the payers. The question is only, ribis tzutzahavu v'yotzin v'yotzin, do we consider it actual fixed ribis, meaning basically ribis daraisa? And therefore, as we learned at the beginning of the parak, according to the Belazar, which we said the halacha was like him, the dayanim can take it away from him. Or maybe it's only avak ribis, maybe it's only osim drabanon, the ein yotzin, and then therefore the dayanim have no ability to take it away.
Avak ribis is only drabanon.
Avak ribis is basically ribis tuta is daraisa, and avak ribis is drabanon. Avak literally means the dust of ribis. We've had the term a few times already. Yeah. It means anything which is not fixed at the time of the loan. It makes sense to say that it is like a bak ribis, that it's not really ribis deraisa, because after all, it was done in the form of a sale. The enyot b'dayanin, and therefore it shouldn't. The enyot b'dayanin, and therefore the dayanin would not have the ability to take away those payers from him. V'chein amod Rava, and so Rava said the same thing also. I guess a bak brings a different gives to Rava. Ki avak ribis havu v'enyot b'dayanin. Now this leads to another question. Up until now, we've been talking about where he says, for example, that you're going to have this field and you're going to be entitled to eat the payers of it for during this period. And we discussed that, how do we deal with that as far as ribis or whatever. Now we're going to start talking about something called a mashkanta, which is that you didn't arrange with him specifically that he's going to be able to eat the payers, which are going to amount to ribis. Up until now, again, we were talking about that you're saying that you will be during the period of the loan, you will be entitled to eat the payers of this field. I'll give them to you as ribis, which we said is author.
You
explicitly say, and the field itself will eventually, the field itself will eventually become yours, which we talked about whether that part is in a smasta or not. Now we're going to start talking about a mashkanta, which is, you didn't say anything specifically like that. You made the field a mortgage on behalf of the loan. The malva is going and then working the field and basically treating it as his own and eating the payers from it, but without it being specified. Now, we're going to start talking about, as we go through the Gemara over here, there's a few different types of mashkantas. One difference is, we're going to start talking about on the days, whether there's nachyaisa or not, which means, are we deducting from the loan based on the amount of payers that he eats? And in that, there's a few different variations within that also, as we shall see on Amud Beis. There's also a difference, as the Gemara is going to be starting to talk about in a minute, there's also a difference whether it's Asra de Misalki or Asra de Loi Misalki. Misalki means to remove it. Meaning, you can have a situation, you can have, and there were different minhagim in different places about this, as far as a mashkanta. One was, if I set up, if I borrow money from you and I make my field a mashkanta, fine, the loan is going to be outstanding, let's say, for 3 years. Anytime during that period, I have the ability to come and say, you know what, I'm ready to pay off the loan. Here's cash. Let me have back my field. That's called Asra de Misalki, a place where they are able, at any time, he can remove him by paying off the loan. The other way is called Asra de Loi Misalki. The other way is called where they say, no, effectively, I rented it from you for 3 years, let's say. You pay off the debt. Very nice. At the end of the 3 years, when the rental period is over, you'll get it back. But meanwhile...
So it's not a loan, it's a rental.
That's the word we're going to talk about. We're going to see soon. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It's a real rental. Why?
Yeah,
the other one is secured.
Yeah.
First one, he can't use it, and the second one, he can use it.
No, in both cases, he's using it. The question is, the question is also going to come down, do you need nachyaisa in both cases? Do you need to deduct from the amount of the loan in both cases? That's going to be one of the things we're going to see. There's going to be a number of differences in halacha between these two different types. So, omalei abaye l'rabba, mashkanta mai. Fine, if you're going to say, Rabba, again, this is according to the Girsa, that Rabba is the one who said the previous thing, that in the case of the payrus of this sale, which wasn't really a sale, he said it's avak ribis, it's ribis de rabbanon. So he says, what's about the din by mashkanta where you didn't specify anything about the payrus? You didn't say anything about the payrus. Yeah. Hasam time of my mission b'lekafle. Do we say that the reason why you're saying it's only ribis de rabbanon in the previous case is because he didn't specify how much is going to be given for the payrus? Hachanami lekafle. Well, the same thing over here. He didn't specify. In which case, we learned yesterday.
In the case here, meaning the
Afanavla case. The previous case that we learned yesterday,
which was
the case where he bought where she bought the field, but it wasn't really a sale because it turned out to be an asmachta.
Okay.
Yeah. So do we say that the reason is because like Kotzle, that he didn't specify that the payrus are that what's going to be with the payrus, and therefore it's only ribis de rabbanon? Over there, meaning in the case of in the previous case that Reb Nachman had said that we learned yesterday. The case where Reb Nachman said, "Never mind, ribis. You sold payrus deco, and you want to change your mind after the payrus grew." Where Reb Nachman said you're able to do that, the reason would be because you didn't make the proper arrangement ahead of time when the payrus started growing. Well, hachanami lekotzle. Then in that case, the logic is okay. Over here also, you didn't specify it. Therefore, maybe it's therefore that's why you're saying it's avak ribis, and also, therefore, in the case of mashkanta, or rather, in the case of mashkanta, you're not specifying anything. So, therefore, yeah. So before Reb Nachman had said hadra arav hadri kavi, he said that the field, the land goes back and the payrus go back. Do we say over here by mashkanta? Then it would be the same kind of thing. Therefore. Therefore there's no problem with it. Therefore there's no problem with the mashkanta. If you specified the payrus, then yeah, you have a tabak ribis. But if you didn't specify anything, maybe it should be mutter. Or maybe though, after all, there is a difference because we're talking about a sale versus a loan. And again, with a loan, as we've said many times in the parish, you have to be more machmir because you're closer to ribis deraisa.
Sale meaning really rental.
No. Before we were talking about an actual sale where you sold. Whether the case over there that we said Amocha Peres Deka Lachaveira, the case where you sold where you sold the fruit of a palm tree,
right.
and then there was Mechila Batos, we said over there.
Right.
Yeah. Amalei. So Rabba tells him, yeah. Hasam time of my mishum b'lekotzle. No, the actual reason is because you didn't specify. And therefore, with you, you didn't specify, and therefore, it's fine. You can do that. A mashkanta, without specifying what's going to be with the payrus, is fine. If the malva ends up eating the payrus, then it's fine, with the conditions that we will see later on in the Gemara.
And it's fine
different
because
you have less of a problem. Yeah, because
because
like Kotzle, because you didn't specify it, but you didn't specify
right,
that you're going to... You didn't specify that you're going to eat the Paris L'Shem Ribbis. You just say, Stam, this field is mortgaged to you for the next 3 years.
Right.
And we will, and that's what we're going to have to see later on. What's the story with those Paris? Are we using those Paris to reduce the value of the loan, or are we not? Are we doing basically a temporary rental independent of the halva? So if, that's the thing. If he had specified saying you will be entitled to eat these payers and that'll be the extra amount that you get.
We reduce the loan.
No, no. If we reduce is mashkanta with nachiyaisa. That's what we're going to talk about later. Mm-hmm. Right now we're saying, okay, if you said, so far you have a few possibilities. You can eat the payers and it'll be ribis. It won't reduce the value of the loan. However, that's the ribis you'll be entitled to. Then we said it's ribis. Tzutza or avak ribis as the case may be. When you say nachyaisa, that we're going to get to on our base. Right now we're dealing with you didn't say anything. So he's saying it's mutter.
So the scenario when you didn't say anything can be ribis, avak ribis, or...
But we're saying it's not. Hachanami loy kotzle. He didn't say that you are eating them as ribis. Therefore, it is mutter. Wait.
But ksitza should not be avak ribis. It should be real ribis.
So, no, because when you make it up at the time of the loan, right? Then it would be ksitza. But you could have, for example, that he made up later on. We said before that you made up. Then it's not ksitza means you made it up at the time of the loan. Anything other than that is a back ribbon.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay. Omer Papi, Ovat Ravina Uvda. It happened once. Ravina passed in the case like this. But Choshev v'Apik Peri, he actually figured out how much the Peris had been eaten during the time. Here again, we're talking about the case like this, where it wasn't a real sale, where it was an asmachta. V'Apik Peri, he actually took away the Peris that the Malva had eaten and made him reimburse for them. Deloy k'Rava Bar Rav Huna, which was not like Rava Bar Rav Huna, who said and like Rava, who said that it's a Vak Ribis, he held it's Ribis Daraisa. So Ravina actually passed him that way one time.
What does it mean, he took it away?
Meaning, in other words, the Malva had eaten those Peres as Ribis. It was Kotzle. They had specified that he's going to be able to eat those Peres as Ribis. We said, unlike Rabba Bar Rav Huna and Rabba and Rava, who just said that it's only Ribis de Rabbanon, therefore Dayanim, you shouldn't do it, but Dayanim cannot take it away from you. Ravina held like the opinion that Ravina held like Ravina held, Rapapi is reporting what Ravina did. Ravina held, according to the other possibility, that we said that it is considered Rubis Ksutza, that it is actually considered Rubis Daraisa, and therefore can be taken away by the day on him. Okay. So now we're going to get in, Kedulay Kedavah Barabona, not like Rabba Barabona's shit.
But we talking like Ravina.
Indeed.
How do we know we post
them? Because before by Ribis Tutta, you have a reference by Ribis Tutta, you have a reference to Ein Mishpat Ne'er Mitzvah, to the Rambam, and by Ovad Ravina Ovda, you also do. See, that's that. Okay, so now we're going to start getting into the whole concept of Mashkanta. Oma Ma'abreder of Yosef Mishmei Deroba. Ha Mashkanta, when it comes to a Mashkanta, again, where you said this field will be at your disposal for the next however many years, however long the term of the loan is. Peiros, we're not getting into what's going to happen with the Peiros. Right now we're just dealing with you have the use of this field for the next couple of years. But Asra de Misalki, so if it's a place where the loiva at any time is so if it's a place where the minig is that the loiva at any time can pay off the loan and remove the malva from it, and meanwhile the malva is eating payers, ochal shirazuzi. So if by the time the loiva pays off the loan, if by that point the malva has eaten an amount equal to the if he ate kashir zuzi according to in accordance with how much the fruit is worth in the marketplace, meaning, in other words, that Rashi says like this. Let's say the loiva comes and says, you know what, up until this point, this guy has been eating the payers as ribis, effectively as ribis, because I still owe the full value of the loan. I don't want to do that. Let's change that. Let's figure out how much he ate so far, and let's deduct that from my loan.
The owner ate the Peris.
Not the owner, the Malva, who's the temporary owner.
The Malva
ate the Peris, yeah. So, yeah, look in the Rashi, Ocho Kashir Zuzi. It's about a little above the middle of the wide lines in Rashi, of the middle side lines in Rashi, Ocho Kashir Zuzi. Kefi Mashinim Korona Peris Vashuk, according to the value of how much these Peris go for in the marketplace, or by a Loiva Lefanenu. So now the Loiva comes Now the lover comes to us, the Beis Din, the Tova, and he claims, "Omar, any roita sheyecha peiros the ribis. I don't want him to be eating my peiros as ribis. Yeshumu peiros shalchal. Let's figure out the value of the peiros he ate. The yitlim bechayva, and he'll take that as partial payment of his debt because ibu havali zuzi loy masakin. No, it's actually the full value of the amount. It's actually the full value of the loan at this point. So therefore,
the full value.
In other words, the loan was 1,000. By now, he's eating 1,000 worth of peiros." He can say, ilu havali zuzi, because the loiver is able to argue, look, if I had this much money, loy mesakin and lay, shouldn't I be allowed, this is an asra den sakin, and this is the case, this is the kind of place where I could at any time come up with $1,000 in cash and he'll have to leave the property. Hashtanami, peri ochol. So now also, the peiros that he ate, zuzi jijinu, are effectively my money. So fine, I've paid him off $1,000 at this point, let me have my field back. So we're saying that we do that.
What's that? That's the...
The loan was 1,000. He gave him the field. He gave him the use of the field. That's a mashkanta.
Mm-hmm.
Up until this point, he was eating the peiros. There was no arrangement that the peiros. There was no nachiyaisa. There was no arrangement that the value of the peiros is going to be deducted from the loan. Eventually, he ate $1,000 worth of peiros. If this amount of peiros were to be sold on the open market, it would be $1,000. It would be worth $1,000. So now the loiver comes and says, well, effectively, he already has $1,000 of mine in his possession. Fine, after the masalki, let him get out of here.
Can I understand why they don't bring up the fact that if he was eating the peiros, who was growing them and maintaining the field for those 3 years? And wouldn't that labor also be included in the cheshbon?
Maybe.
He was eating it himself. So they
No. But it's true. Repeat. No, because we are talking about that he's working. We are talking about that he's working the field, et cetera.
But for himself.
Yes, so I don't know if that necessarily gets deducted over here. No, the pashtus we only deduct the actual amount of the payers.
Yeah. Why should he be compensated for his own work?
Well, but it is. Yeah, I don't know. But
because what?
That's not fair for the lender.
It is very fair for the lender. He eats the Paris and the work.
No. But
he did work to get to the.
Yeah.
He did $1,000 worth of work, maybe.
Not necessarily $1,000 worth of work.
For
okay,
him,
whatever.
He makes $1,000 an hour as a lawyer.
Yeah. Okay. Well, he'd hire an artist in that case. But fine.
Okay.
Okay.
So he hired an artist.
So the loan should be terminated because he had that amount of loan in Paris.
That's what we're saying. So you're asking, what about the expenses he put in? I don't know if the expenses factor in. I have no idea.
Well,
I'm
maybe
not sure.
It is factored in.
I don't know.
We don't know.
All right. So if the malva ends up eating the amount that the payers, the amount of payers equal to the value of the loan, misalkin and lay, sure enough, he can be removed from the property. Ochol tfei, however, not according to Ravina. This is a new topic. This is a topic of mashkanta now.
Right.
Ochol tfei, but if he ended up eating more than that amount, loy mafkin and minay, we do not take that extra amount from him because that would be avak ribis, and you can't have dayanim take away avak ribis. So if he ended up eating 1,200 worth of fruit by the time the guy showed up with his claim, then you don't take the extra 200 away from him.
Right.
Yeah, he gained. He gained. He ended up getting an extra 200 out of it. Furthermore, we do not allow that 200, let's say, to count towards another shtar. Let's say he borrowed one loan of him for 1,000, another loan for 500, let's say. If you were to say machashvin mishtar l'shtar, you would say, okay, you can't take away the 200 for him on behalf of the first one, but we can count it as 200 towards the next loan. We don't say that. You still owe the full 500 on the first loan. However, if we're talking about a field of Yisoimim, then the local Beis Din is Abiyam Sho Yisoimim. They're responsible for making sure that the Yisoimim have the best possible arrangement. And the Yisoimim, you can't say, are Moichel, because Yisoimim are not capable of being Moichel on the extra that he ate. Therefore, Ochol Shir Zuzim Yisakin and Lay. So if he ate the exact amount, then we do remove him, just like with anybody else. Even if he eats extra, we do actually take it away from him as well. And we will allow that to flow over to another shtar if they borrowed on another shtar.
In the case of Yisamim,
yeah.
Why bother even saying that if they're going to take it away from him anyway?
Okay, so actually the Hagoyt HaGru points out that the Rambam and the Rif have a girsa that you don't take away the extra from them if there's no other shtar, because it's still a vak ribis, you don't take it away from him. However, if there is another shtar, we'll allow it to count towards that. Actually, then, if you're saying that he ends up eating more than 1,000, you don't take that extra away from him, then actually Rav Ashi says, no, not like we said before. As a matter of fact, no, then it would come out that if he ate the exact amount, the exact thousand, you still wouldn't make him leave it without paying him, without paying him off the full loan. My timer, Saluki Beloy Zuzi, Apukiminehu. Because after all, to take him away at that point, to say the whole loan has been paid off and you have to leave it without getting anything further, that would be effectively taking away the thousand from him. Have Avakrivis, and the whole thousand to begin with is Avakrivis. The Avakrivis, any year to the Dayanim. And Avakrivis cannot be taken away by the Dayanim. So not like we said that the thousand, that you can take away the field from him once the first thousand is eaten and anything else he eats after that, he gets to keep. No. Even if you're going to take, you can take the field away from him, fine. No, you can't take it away from him. The only way the loiver is going to be able to get back that field is by actually putting $1,000 cash on the table. He already ate $1,000 worth of payers. Doesn't matter. That's a vak ribis. You can't force him to give back a vak ribis.
By the way, how does the Rambam have the girsa there? If it's not the thing we pass, because the Rambam doesn't pass in like that, so why would it even be in his girsa? The goes around the base, you see.
Because we said, "Achol tfei loy mapkinin mine," because there is still the difference that if he eats more, that we don't take that away from him and we don't count from shtar to shtar. That part of the din still exists. We're saying that if he ate the thousand, you don't take
you
away
don't
the field from him, but there's an additional detail that you also don't take away the extra 200 from him.
If you sell him,
you would. Yeah.
You take away everything, even according to the new.
But we don't say that the 1,000 is Havak and that the extra 200 is.
That's the thing. We're saying the whole thing is Havak Ribbis. That's what Rav Ashi is arguing.
The next thing
you're saying, you don't take the 200 away from him because it's Havak Ribbis. You can't take away the 1,000 from him either. It would also be Havak Ribbis.
Okay. And this is the second of Rav Ashi.
Yeah. And in fact, Ovid Rav Ashi Ubdub Yisomim Ktanim Kigdolim. And in fact, one time Rav Ashi actually passed in a case like that involving young Yisomim. Treating them like adults, which actually he said that even though it's true, Yisomim don't have the ability to be mochel. On the other hand, it's a vak ribis. You still can't take it away from him.
We say why? I mean, because it's the rabbanan, we don't enforce.
Because it's the rabbanan, we
but
can't.
Sometimes
right.
A lot of things that are the rabbanan, we enforce.
Of course, but in the case because the detail is, we said before, a vak ribis, because it's only also the rabbanan do not have the power to take it away from the guy. We learned at the beginning of the perek, especially we talked about a sicha that ever talks about the svara, is that at that point it's considered the malva's money. So you can't take it away from him without a valid cause.
Hi, you're looking for the call. She is, and I'm not home, so I don't know where she is. She's probably not answering my phone.
Right.
Oh, you're downstairs? Are you, right?
Okay. I'm a rubber braider of Yosef Mishmeder.
Ring the bell.
Aaron, can you? I'm a rubber braider of Yosef Mishmeder. Hi, Mashkanta. Let's go further into this dinner, Mashkanta. Asra de Misalki, in a place where the loiva always has the ability to pay off the debt and therefore remove the malva from there.
Because
then
that
in that, then in that, then in that, well, right? We said before there's yeah, different metagram on that. In a place, the astra de masalki. Then what it is effectively it's tied to the loan. Therefore, like nechol ela benachyaisa. Therefore, the only way you're going to be allowed to do, the only way you're going to be allowed to eat the peres is with nachyaisa. Namely, you deduct from the debt a fixed amount per year for the peres. Now, the peres may vary. Some years it may be more. Some years it may be less. But you say, for example, on average, let's say, this field produces $100 worth of payers every year. So we'll say then that every year for the next 10 years, the loan will be deducted, the amount of the loan will go down by 100. Now, it may end up that he ends up eating a lot more payers than that. That's fine, according to what we're saying so far, because Rashi says, because the reason why it's fine is because there's always that risk. There's always that risk that there may be 1 year when there's no payrus at all. The Rambam also holds the same way. There are other, the Rambam mentions the Gaonim learn differently, but the Rashi and the Rambam both learn there is a difference in that regard, therefore, between a field, for example, and let's say a house. A house, as long as the house is standing, you're guaranteed an income stream from it every year. Therefore, if it ends up, if you said I'm going to deduct $100 per year, because you're able to rent out this house or you're able to live in it yourself, and later on the expected rental from it goes up to 120, then you have a problem of ribbis. Because there's no reason to think that in any year it'll be less than 100. But with potatoes,
you'd be less. I mean,
no, only if the house gets damaged or something, which is an unusual.
The rentals,
if you start at 2008 and then you go into 2010, you get less rent.
No, not necessarily. The tenants just don't pay.
No, come on. Then you take them to basement. It's still money that's owed to you. We're not talking about that. The point is, there is pretty well guaranteed that the amount is not going to be less. Whereas with a field.
Solomon agrees.
Okay, fine. So that's the thing. Rashi says you only need this nachyaisa business if it's astra de misalki. If it's astra de misalki, then like you said before, it's really a sale. It's really a temporary sale for those 10 years or whatever. It's not really nothing to do with the loan at all. Therefore, you don't need nachyaisa. Okay. However, with tsurva mirabanan, however, a tamid chacham who should act kadosh atzmo chabam mutalach, because you don't want people to learn from him to be careless with isurim, afilu benachyaisa lenechol, he should not even eat the peiros based on nachyaisa, because people are going to misunderstand. They're going to see that he's getting $150 worth of peiros out of the thing when it's only being reduced by 100, and they're going to think you can take rid of this. El of my nechol. So in that case, how should a tsurva mirabanan be able to eat peiros from such a field, from ashkanta? Bekitzusa, he can do it based on kitzusa, which we'll talk in a few lines what kitzusa is. Okay, before we get into what kitzusa is, hanichal amanda am kitzusa sharia. Fine, that works according to the opinion that a kitzusa is allowed. El amanda am kitzusa asira ma'ifel mema. Then what are you going to say? The itmar, as in fact there is a discussion kitzusa pligibor of achav and rabina. Rav Achav and Rabina. No. Kitzusa, we're going to see in a second. There's no question of it being real. Well, kitzusa, you're right. It's related to katzas, but we'll see in a minute what it means. Pligibar of Achav Rabina. Chadam kitzusa shari v'chadam kitzusa asira. One says it's also, one says it's mutter. So according to the opinion that says that it's also, how should a server man abanan work it out? Now, what is kitzusa? Hey, chidam kitzusa. The amalei, it's like this. The malva says to the loiva, for the first 5 years, I am going to eat the peiros of this field without deducting from the loan. After that, I will figure out the full amount, the actual amount of the peiros per year. So now, why is such a thing allowed? Why is he allowed to eat all the peiros the first 5 years without deducting anything from the loan? The reason is, Rishonim say, because then, in effect, we can consider him like an oris. Usually an oris, when you work a field and you get a certain percentage of the crops, a sharecropper, and the owner gets a certain percentage, usually you divide them year by year, but not necessarily. Sometimes you may do exactly like this. The first, let's say I'm going to hire you as a sharecropper for the next 10 years. The first 5 years, you'll get to have all the payers. After that, I'll get to have all the payers. But here it's with a vashkanta, it's the same idea. Therefore, you're able to say that for the first 5 years, the malva is going to get all the payers, and there's not going to be any deduction, no nachyaisa. At the end of the 5 years, the full 1,000 is going to be outstanding.
Why is he allowed to be a sharecropper?
Because it's a normal situation that you do. He's not getting any. There's no ago netto over here. You're not giving him anything more than
working it.
Because he's working it. Yeah.
That was my question from before.
Okay. All right. So for the first 5 years, maybe that's just it. Maybe the first 5 years you're having to put in more work than afterwards. I don't know. Whatever it is. So therefore, you're able, according to this opinion, you're able to say that. You're able to say at the end of the 5 years, the full 1,000 will be outstanding. After that, the nachyaisa we're going to do is not a fixed amount. Now, we're not going to say, let's say, 100 per year, regardless, even if it's a bumper crop of 150 or 200. We're going to figure it out exactly. If 1 year there's 100 of payers, then the debt will go down by 100. If another year there's 200, it'll go down by 200, etc. That's kitzusa. Ikadamri, or another version of this discussion, is kol b'loy nachyaisa, so that no, you can never have a period like that. You can't have that 5 year period when there's no deduction. That would be a problem of business, because there is agon netto there. You are, after all, getting 5 years of all the crops out of it without any deduction. Aval hechi dami kitzusa. So according to the second version, what is kitzusa? What is the kitzusa on which we have the machlokas of Rav Achav and Ravina, whether it's also or not? The Amalei, namely, he says, ad chamesh shnin achil lemin achyaisa, the first 5 years will do a nachyaisa, like we said before, 100 per year, regardless of the size of the crop. Mikan ve'elach sheyim neloch kulaperi. And from then on, we will figure the exact amount.
Considering the remaining 5 years would be reduced.
So the first 5 years doesn't have to be
deducted.
That's fine.
Afterwards,
afterwards we're deducting the full amount. If there's 150 one year, then we're deducting 150. If there's 75 another year, we're deducting 75. We're not doing a fixed 100.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Manda also become Maisa Shori Bibasrai. So the opinion that would say that the first kind of kitsusa is also the kind where for 5 years there's no deductions at all, would say that the second one is mutter. So the question is, Manda also Bibasrai. So if we understand kitsusa according to the second version, and we say that the machlokas of Acha and Ravina applies to that, that one of them says that's mutter and the other one says even that is also, then we're back to the question, what should the Psurva Merabbanan do? Nachyaisa he can't do. Even this kind of kitsusa he can't do. What should he do? The answer is Shori ki mashkanta de Sura. It would be allowed the kind of mashkanta that they do in the city of Sura. To kasmive hochi, which the difference is, in Sura they write in the shtar that Mishlam Shnaya Ilain, when these years of the mashkanta are over, tipuk arada v'loy kesef. This field will go back, will go out from the possession of the malva back to the loiva without any extra money being paid. The Tosfos discusses the difference. The reason why that works is because since you're specifying that, it doesn't any, even if it's an Asra de Masalki, even if it's a place where all these years the loiva could have paid off the debt and removed the malva, but by writing this into the shtar, it makes it, it's not really like a halva. It's the equivalent of saying, I bought in advance from you these peiros for X number of years.
So they talk in the shtar about the peiros?
They actually say in the shtar that at the end of the period, it'll go back to you without you having to pay anything further. In other words, Tosfos says like this, if you don't write that, if you just deduct on an annual basis, you say every year we're going to deduct 100, then it makes it look like, okay, so 1 year you're going to have 150 worth of payers. You're only deducting 100 from the loan. It amounts to you're selling them 150 worth of payers for 100, which would be a problem of Rivis, as we learned before, like renting him a property at below market value.
I'm not Rivis,
but still, yeah. Since you write in the shtar to begin with, that at the end of this time it'll go out below kesef, then it amounts to it's not really selling it to him below cost price. You're just saying I'm selling you each year's payers at its fair market value of that year, which is fine. So again, the Gaonim that the Rambam quotes hold that a mashkanta de sura is the only kind that's mutter.
Everybody agrees with it.
Everybody agrees that mashkanta de sura is fine. Yeah, that's the best kind. So the Gaonim that the Rambam quotes say that's the only kind of mashkanta that's mutter. The Rambam himself says that no, some of the other kinds we talked about before, kitsusa would be mutter, for example. Mashkanta de sura, yeah.
Because it goes according to the market value, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Rapapa for Rabhuna Bredi Ravishua Amitavai. Okay, so now further about mashkantas. Rapapa and Rabhuna Bredi Ravishua want to tell us a number of dinim about mashkantas, where there's going to be a difference in halacha, in the status of the mashkanta, whether it's an asra de masalki or an asra de loy masalki, a place where the loyva is able to pay off, the debt in advance and get his field back, or a place where he's not able to, where it's still going to stay in the possession of the malva all those years until the term is over. So, Hai Mashkanta, but Asra de Masalki, if it's a place where the loiva is able to remove the malva anytime by paying off the debt.
In other words, prepay is authorized.
Yes.
Prepaying the loan off,
yeah. So in such a place, that property cannot really be considered to be the property of the malva all this time. Therefore, Ein Baal Chov Goyve Hemena. No, during those years, even before the loan has been paid off, it's not really considered the Malva's possession. Therefore, Ein Baal Chov Goyve Hemena. Therefore, if, for example, if the Malva dies during that period and his sons take over the Mashkanta, if their father himself owed other people money, he would not be able to take it away from the Yisoyim. We've learned many times before that karka that Yisroelim inherit from their father remains under the same shibud to the Baal Chov, metaltal and not, but here it's not considered karka that they inherited from their father because it wasn't really their father's in the first place.
Redeemable.
Yeah. It's not considered karka that they inherited from their father.
And if he doesn't pay,
But still, during those 3 years, it's still during those three,
during
years,
those 3 years,
during those 3 years,
after,
we're talking,
the 3 years.
After the 3 years, then we said, you know,
doesn't pay.
Well, then, so we said, does it become his afterwards or not? No, we said that we, again, in the Mishnah, we had talked about a case where he says at the end of the 3 years, it'll be yours. But we said, actually, that's a smash.
Right.
Now we're talking about at the end of the 3 years, it will go back, but does the loan still have to be paid off or not? That's what we were talking about. Whether you're doing nachyaisa, is there still any amount outstanding of the loan? Are we doing mashkanta de surya where it's all considered paid off? Are we doing kitsusa, whatever? So in b'achoy gevehemena, the in b'achoy notable pishnayim. Another din that would apply to this mashkanta then is that the b'achoy wouldn't get a double portion of it because again, it doesn't really belong to the malva. It doesn't really belong to the malva. So therefore his children wouldn't get a double portion of it, even if they do end up taking over the field. And Shvius can cancel this loan, just like any other milta, because, okay, there's a shibud over here, fine, but it's not malva ala mashkin, because a mashkin implies metalsalim. This is a character. Over asra deloy masauki, but in a place where the loiva does not have the ability to remove the malva, meaning it's unconditionally the malva's throughout the life of the loan, because only at the end of it is he able to pay off. Then balchoyv goyvehemenu. Then the malva's own balchoyv would be able to collect from it because it's considered that it was effectively sold to him for that period of time. And his children would inherit a double portion of it. It's b'chor. The en shvius meshamata, and shvius doesn't cancel it because it extends beyond. Yeah, because it depends for the duration of the loan. Duration alone. Beyond shmita. Hi mashkanta. But Astra de Masalki, in a place where the loiva is able to prepay off the loan and get back the field. Then when it comes to taking him out of the field, you can even, for example, let's say it comes to the date harvest, and the malva has already spread out his mats on the ground over there. Usually when you harvest dates, because the palm trees are tall, you spread out mats on the ground so that the dates will land on them instead of in the dirt. Even if you have dates that are already on the mat, so the mats are already the kalim of the malva. You would think in that case the dates at that point belong to him. It's considered they're in his kalim. Nevertheless, you can even take those back from him. You paid off the debt, then you get back everything, including the payers debt. However, if the malva already placed them, already took them off the mats and placed them into baskets and picked them up, then already he was kona them by hagbar. So then he gets to keep those. Furthermore, according to the opinion, which we've discussed before, that a lekeach kelim, if they're in the property of the moicher, he's still able to be koneh if something is placed into those kelim. So he's standing, let's say, in the lekeach spotzer and brings in his own kelim and puts things into there. Then even if he didn't pick them up in baskets, the very fact they were on the mats are his kalim, and therefore not his reshus, but his kalim. Okay. Further, let's talk a little bit more about this matter of mashkanta. Pshita. Now it's obvious that the Asra de Masalki, if you have a place where normally the arrangement with mashkanta is that the loiva is able to pay off the debt and remove the malware from the premises
before the expiration.
Yes, but omer loy mistalak. Now, however, at the time of the loan, the malva says I want to make it differently. I want our arrangement in this case to be different. Even if I'm lending you this money and you're giving me this mashkanta on condition that you will not be able to remove me until the expiration of it.
That's at the beginning of the loan?
Rashi says at the beginning of the loan. Agoras Agura points out that there are Rishonim, the Ramban and the Rashba says that this can work even if it's after, at some point, whenever the Mashkanta is arranged. Okay. So if he says Loi Mistalakna, okay. Fine. Hakam and Loi Mistalakna, fine. He lent him money on that condition. So that condition, if that condition is not honored, then there wasn't a valid loan over here. Ella, we have to ask the other way around. But ask for Deloy Masalki, if it's a place where normally the malva cannot be removed from the premises during the life of the mashkanta. But I'm a mistalakna. But he says, you know what? I'll be a nice guy. If you come and bring me the money, I'll vacate the premises. Mate, so what's the din? Sorachul mifnimine oloi. Do we need to be kona from him? Do we need to make a kinyan? Because otherwise you can just say it's words. Do we need to arrange a kinyan? Does the loiva need to make the loiva and the malva need to make a kinyan to confirm the statement? Or otherwise, maybe the malva has the ability to say, okay, I told you that. Talk is cheap. Fatumi mili, so not really a smacha, but fatumi mili, like we said, the other day. Yeah. Tosfos says it's actually not really because of fatumi mili. Fatumi mili, not unrealistic. It's just like you're saying it just to make the guy feel better. Tosfos says it can't be because then why do you need a kinyan? Fatumi mili, we said the problem was that the wrong party said it. Fine. All you need is that the loiva should say it over here instead of the malva.
Right.
So it can't be that it's a matter of patrumi mili, but it's just a matter of it's similar sort of. It would be dvarim ba'alma. It's not something that you can hold them to necessarily.
Why it's only for the malva to say it?
Patrumi mili because it's switched.
Why?
Remember, we learned the other day. About patrumi mili that you had over there that. It should be the one who is buying the field in that case, for example, have the ability to make this condition. I'm only buying it on condition that you reimburse me if it gets taken away from me. In that case, it was the seller who said voluntarily, I'm willing to do that. And we said, Fatumi Mili, it's the wrong party saying it. Same thing over here, Tosfos says. If it's just that the Malva is saying voluntarily, fine, I'm willing to vacate the premises, Mr. Lachna. And we're saying maybe that's Patumi Mili because it should be the loiva when he's making the mashkanta should say, I'm doing this mashkanta on condition that even though the local minig is that you don't have to vacate, but in this case you're going to have to. That would be, if we're saying that's valid, you don't need a kinyan for that. The point is, Tosfos says, regardless in this case whether the malva or the loiva said it, you could argue that it's only dvarim ba'alma, it's just its words. Maybe you need something to hold it, maybe you need something stronger to hold them to it. So Rav Papa says you don't have to make a kinyan on that. His word is good enough. Rav Sheshes Rav Idiom Tzarach L'Mikdimene. He says you do need to make a kinyan. Halacha is like Rav Sheshes Rav Idiom Tzarach L'Mikdimene. To do that, you have to make a kinyan from him. If you don't make a kinyan, it's just the Buddha Ba'alvo. It's just words. He can say after Minagamakam prevails. Exactly. Yeah. More dinim on this. Omar, suppose that. The loiva
have to be written also.
No, a kinyan is enough.
Stipulated.
A kinyan. I think a kinyan is usually done in the presence of edim. I don't know if it necessarily has to be. No, it doesn't have to be. Yeah. Okay. All right. More dinim about mashkanta and about removing the malva from the premises. Omar, what if the loiva says ezel va'aisi zuzi? If he says sometime during the time of the mashkanta, let me go and get some money. Stop eating the payers. I'm gonna go bring you money and pay off the debt. Loy ochel. Then at that point the malva is taka not allowed to eat the payers anymore because at that point he has no more rishus to. On the other hand, because it's asked for the misalki, the place where he can remove him at any time. So once he says ezel va'aisi zuzi, I have the money at home. I just need to run home and get it. At that point, the guy has to stop eating the payers.
Yes.
However, ezel v'etrach v'aisi zuzi, what happens if the loiva says, I taka don't have money now, but I'm planning to go and work to get the money together, borrow from other people, earn extra income, whatever it is, so therefore stop eating now. Is that enough? Ravina ama achul mazut rebedu ramami ama lay achul. So Ravina says, that doesn't matter, we can still continue eating. And mazut rebedu ramami says, no, at that point he has to stop. Ve'hochas alay achul, and in fact the halacha is he has to stop. Once the guy makes it known that I want to pay off the debt, then at that point, yeah. Now, we talked about at the top of the Omer, we talked about Nachyaisa, about a mashkanta where you deduct from the loan based on the amount of the payers that he ate, or not based on the amount, on a fixed amount per year, we said. So, we said you can do that, v'nachyaisa, if it's an asur de masalki, again, if it's a place where the minig hamakom is that you can cancel off the mashkanta anytime you want, and you're able to do it only v'nachyaisa. However, we said a psur v'minabonon should not do that, because he should be more strict with himself. So the Gemara says, Rav Kahana v'Rav Papa v'Rav Ashi loy achli v'nachyaisa, these three amiroim, Rav Kahana, Rav Papa, and Rav Ashi all followed that, so they would not eat peiros based on nachyaisa, because they were more machmer on themselves. Ravina achol v'nachyaisa.
Yeah. Time, basically, that people
Ravina ochel benachyaisa. However, Ravina did. Now, the obvious question is what happened to the super metabolism thing? So Tosfos brings two things. First of all, that Rabbeinu Tam wants to say that Rabbeinu didn't want to consider himself as a Talmud Chacham.
Oh, wow.
He didn't consider himself as a Talmud Chacham, that he's concerned that people are going to learn from him. So actually, in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about this in a different context in connection with the halachas of working on Tisha B'Av. The El Yerabah wants to say over there one answer, that because in many cases we do say that a person should be machmir on himself to be like a Talmud Chacham. He says when it's something that involves inui nefesh, so when it's something that involves physical pain or whatever, sure, be machmir on yourself. But when it's something that involves financial matters over here, you're not obligated to do that. If he didn't consider himself a Talmud Chacham, he's not obligated to do that.
But he may not have considered himself a Talmud Chacham and still be one. And then what?
Okay, but he's not worried that people are going to learn from it. Okay, Tosfos also gives a couple of other answers. Another answer is that when we say over here Nachyaita, we mean Kitzusa, and we have the Machlokas over there, Rav Acha and Ravina, where the Kitzusa is allowed. In general, we assume that Ravina is the one who's Mekel, and so he's going according to his own Shitta. Okay. Omar Marzutra, my time of demand to Ochel ben Achyaisa, why indeed the opinion, for example, Ravina, the opinion we said at the top of the Omud, that you're able to do ben Achyaisa, why is that? Why does such a thing work? Midi to have a Sdei Achuza, because we can compare it to the case where the Torah talks about a Sdei Achuza, when you have a field that you inherited from your ancestors, which you were Makdish it. The Pasuk says that if you want to buy it back from Hektish, you have to pay Hektish a selo punyin, one seller plus one punyin, a fraction of a seller, for every year that there is left until Yovel. So the way it works out, the Pasuk says that you pay, if it's right after Yovel, you pay 50 sloyim to redeem it. 50 sloyim divided into 49 years comes out of seller and a punyin plus an extra punyin. So you do it at the rate of one seller and one punyin per year. And you buy it back from Hektish on that basis. And if somebody else wants to buy from Hektish, same thing.
So putting in like 2 cents.
I don't know about that. Well, yeah, okay. Fine. If you want to say, yeah, putting in is 1/48 of a seller. Yeah, okay. All right. So, Sdei Achuza Lav Afagav
De'Ochel.
Okay, new. Sdei Achuza Lav Afagav De'Ochel Pei Ritzuva. Now, in the case of a Sdei Achuza, even though the one who buys this field, so let's say, Reuben was Makdish it, and Shimon buys it from Hektish. We're saying he pays a selo kunyan machol shana. Even though he may well be eating, a lot of peiros, or for that matter, Hektish, as long as Hektish has a field, they may be getting a lot of peiros out of it. It may be worth much more than a selo kunyan. And yet the Torah says that a guy can be paid it from Hektish for only 4 zuzim, meaning 1 selah plus the extra kunyan. But okay, the point is, no matter how much of a crop each base saw produces. It's 50 sloyim per base saw. Zerachoy masorim b'chamishim shekel kalsim. So this amount is per base saw, but fine, not one base saw can end up producing a lot more than
right.
4 zuzim, than 1 selah's worth of So therefore, he argues the same thing over here. You see that whenever you have something like that, like a field, where there's always a chance there may not be a crop, there may be, we're saying that it's fine. You can do a nachyaisa. You can do like this. Every year that I have the field in my possession, or every year that Hektish has the field in their possession, we're deducting 1 selah and 1 punyan, no matter how much the crops were actually worth. Same logic, then, we can say, when it comes to a malva and a loiva and a mashkanta, same thing. You can say, regardless of how much it's worth, we can say that the average amount of crops for this kind of field is going to be a selah. It comes out 1 year with 3 sloyim. Not our problem. Umanda also, what about the opinion who said that also? Amalach, he can answer you. Sdeachuz a hektishi. Fine, but sdeachuz is a case of hektish. First of all, gzeres akasiv, and second of all, hektish is different. We learned before that ribis doesn't apply to hektish. V'rachmona oikmei apidyon. So the Torah establishes this is the amount you need. This is the amount you need to redeem it. It's not really a loan in the first place. In other words, there's a few things. It's hektish, and it's not really a loan per se. Hacha halvah.
What is it then?
It's not. You sold the field that you gave the field to hektish. Hektish turned around and sold it to somebody else. There's no loan involved. We're talking about how much you need to buy it back from hektish. Whereas over here, we're talking about ultimately the mashkanta is based on a loan, or mechzik ribis, and therefore at least it looks like ribis. So therefore, they would say it's more of an issue. Amar Ravashi, more dinim about mashkanta. Amar li sovri de masa machasya. The elder Tamar Chachamim of Masa Machasya told me, stam mashkanta shata. Sam Amashkanta is for 1 year. If you don't specify how long it is, it's for 1 year. L'may nafkamina, what's the importance of knowing that? The och loshata mokta masalikle, that only if the malva ended up eating the produce of it for 1 year, at least, are you able to be masalikim, even in an asher de masalki. Even in an asher de masalki, we still say he always gets a year out of it. The Eloi Eloi Mokta Masalikle, if he didn't even have it for a year yet, then, of course, if he wants to give it back, he could anytime he wants. But the loiva does not have any ability within the first year to say, here is the money, now get out of my field.
He has to give him at least a year.
Yeah. Even an Astrid and Masalki. And an Astrid and Masalki, of course, nothing to talk about. That is however long Mashkanta was arranged for you. But Amr Ravashi, Amr Li Sovid and Masa Machasya. The elders of Masa Machasya told me another thing about Mashkanta. My Mashkanta, where does the name Mashkanta come from? The Shchuna Gabe. It's like he is the neighbor to it, he's like the closest neighbor. What's the relevance of that is as far as the Din of Bar Mitzvah. We've learned before, we've talked in Bava Kama about the Din of Bar Mitzvah. We're going to learn much more about it towards the end of our Masechta. It's that when Reuven is selling a field, if Shimon has a field next door, he has the first right to go and buy the field. And in fact, if Reuven ended up selling it to Levi or lives somewhere else, Shimon has the ability to say to Levi, here's your money, I'm taking over the field. You effectively bought it as if you were my agent.
He has the first right.
He has the first right, yeah.
So that's their field also?
We'll see later on. We'll talk about it, fields versus houses. We'll get into it later, but all the dinim of it. The point is, the reason why it works is because Shimon can tell Levi, you don't have to need this field. You can go buy a field someplace else. For me, it's beneficial. I'll have my fields right next to each other. I can make it into one big field. It's much easier to work. So it's almost like Zen and Zele Chotzer, kind of. So the point is that over here, if a malva has a mashkanta on a field, he is considered the closest shochin. He is considered the closest neighbor. If the loiva wants to eventually sell that field, then that malva has first right even over the local neighbor. He can say, if he lives somewhere else, that's what we're saying. Because since it's already the shchuna gabe, it's already like quasi his. It's already semi-his by being a mashkin by him, then therefore he has first right to buy it even ahead of all the neighbors.
So does that apply to housing? It's important.
We'll see when we get there.
If let's say, a neighbor makes a loan on his neighbor's house.
You usually don't, unless you're borrowing from a bank or something, you usually don't put up your house as collateral.
Not your whole house, but the amount of loan that you give.
Okay, we'll get to it. We'll get to it eventually. Okay. Omar Rava. So now, going back now to the concepts of ribis, Omar Rava, let hilchsa leketarshi papunoi. The halacha is not like the tarsha of papunoi, meaning of a papa that we learned about the other day, where a papa used to sell beer on. If people didn't pay him right away in Tishrei, he charged them the higher nissen prices. He said it's not a problem of ribis because I don't need the money right away anyway, he said I don't need the money right away and the beer doesn't spoil, so therefore I'm doing them a favor by allowing them to pre-purchase it. And we said there that doesn't work though, because fine, from your point of view it's not ribis, but from their point of view it is. So the halacha is not like him. But like a shtori mechuznoi, not like the shtoris of mechuzza, which we'll see in a minute what those are. But like a chachiri, now show you, and the halacha is also not like the chachira, the rental of Neresh, which is another place in Babel. We'll explain what each of these things is. Katarshi papunoi means katarshi did a papa, the tarsha of a papa that we talked about the other day. The halacha is not like him. You're not allowed to do such a tarsha. Even if you yourself don't need the money at the time, but the other people should have been able to get the benefit of paying the lower price now rather than having to pay the higher price.
The case was
that he's selling beer in Tishrei when the beer has just been brewed. The prices usually are higher in Nissan, and he's telling them, if you pay me now, you can get the Tishrei prices. If you're going to buy on credit, then you have to pay me the Nissan prices. So he said it's not a problem because it's not like I have any benefit from the matter. The beer is not going to spoil. I could have just as well waited until Nissan to sell it. And I don't need the money because I'm rich. So therefore, from my point of view, I'm not gaining anything from getting a prepayment. However, Rav Sheshes, Brei Rav Edi, points out to him that, yeah, that's true from your point of view, but from their point of view, they're giving agar netzer because they're giving you agar netzer. They're giving you a benefit by not paying you now, because if they had money on the spot, they would have gone and bought it cheaply elsewhere. So the halacha is not like a papa in that. What's story mechuznoi? Is zakfile levavcha akana? What they would do is like this in mechuzza. They'd buy merchandise. They'd give it to traders to sell for them. The deal was that we'll split the profit. The deal was we'll split the profit.
They commissioned it.
Yeah. Which was what we'll talk about in the next Mishnah. They will split the profits. What we do is we figure out how much profit are you likely to make on that. So we say, let's say, for example, it was $100 worth of merchandise. We say that I expect you're going to be able to sell this for $110. So we'll write in the shtar the zaktel levavcha akarna. They include the profits, the expected profits, together with the keren, the kastvele v'shtara, and they write it out into the shtar. They say, in other words, you owe 55, let's say, which they, you have a potential problem of ribis over there, because mi yemed haver davcha. Who says that there's going to end up being that amount of profit? If it ends up that instead of 110, they only sell it for 104, it comes out there was only $4 worth of profit. Why are you making him pay 55 on a $50 loan, effectively? You have a potential problem of ribis. However, the Mar Baramemer tells Ravashi, you should know, Abba Avid Hachi, what are you telling me? The halacha is not like that. My father used to do that. However, the difference is, when the merchants came to my father and they said, okay, but in fact, we didn't end up selling it for 110, we only ended up selling it for 104, he would believe them. So fine, in that case, okay, the shtar says you owe 55, but we understood that that was 50 of keren and 5 of profit. So like this, there was only two of profit, that's my portion. Fine, then you only owe me 52. So apparently there's no problem with it. Amalei, so Rav Ashi tells him, Tena hecha de isa l'diday. Okay, that works out very nice. Your father's a chassid. Your father will trust them. If he's still alive when they're paying, okay, then we're good. What would happen if your father were to pass away and then the shtar ends up in the hands of the Yisraelim? They don't know what the deal was over here. They see a shtar that says 55. They're going to demand 55. Well, by saying that, by Rav Ashi saying that, it was like a mistake that comes out of the mouth of a ruler. When a Talmud Chacham says something, like Rav Ashi says something, it has an effect. By him mentioning like that, if your father, Ma'amema, were to pass away, sure enough, Ma'amema passed away. The person has to be very careful with their words. Well, that's the second case. Ultimately, we're saying that Rav Ashi's point is valid. You can't do that even if you yourself are a chassid, because you never know what's going to be after you pass away. So the shtoris of mechuzah are not allowed. Okay. What is the case of the rental of Neresh, which is awesome? The Kaspi Hachi, they write like this in the Shtai. Mishkin le planya ari le planya. Pliny the loiva has made his field a mashkanta to Pliny the malva. Vahadr chokra mine. And then he rented it back from him. In other words, we say the malva effectively is the temporary owner of this property now. It's an asra de misalki, evidently, we're talking about. So the loiva has the ability to pay off the loan at any time. But we're saying now the malva, who's the temporary owner of this property, turned around and rented it to the loiva. And the difference is a chakira, we're going to talk a great deal in ninth parak. Not really subleasing, because he's the temporary owner of it, but whatever. The point is that the difference between, now up until, we talked about an oris many times, where an oris pays a certain percentage of the crops to the owner. There's also a different arrangement we're going to learn in the ninth parak. We're going to learn a lot about the difference between them. Chachira is a rental where you owe a fixed amount regardless of what the size of the crop was. You're going to always have to pay X number of kurin per year. If the field produced a lot more, good, you'll get a bonus. If not, then you may end up having to buy some. Never mind ribis. In an ordinary case where there's no loan involved, if I have a field and I'm choicher it to you, it's the equivalent of renting you a house or something. I expect 10 bushels of wheat a year. If the field produced 20 bushels, okay, we'll split half and half. If it produced 50 bushels, wonderful, you'll get 4/5 of the crop. But if it only produced 8 bushels, you're going to have to give me all those 8, plus you're going to have to buy an extra 2 on the market, because I expect my 10 regardless.
So
that's a hakira. Here, where you have, so here where you're doing, the malva owns the field, effectively, and now he's renting it back to the loiva. The problem with it is, When was the malva actually koina this field such that he should be able to be choicher, such that he should be able to rent it out? It amounts to ribis. Rashi actually uses the expression ribis ksutza. Okay, there are mafarshim who say maybe Rashi doesn't necessarily mean ribis ksutza. It's at least, maybe it's only avak ribis, but it's a very strong kind of ribis, yeah. However, for idna de kakasvi hachi, however, the Gemara says nowadays, in later times, they started writing in the shtar, koninimine, I acquired the field from him. The Shehina Kama Idni, I waited a long period of time. I waited X number of years. The Hodur Chachra, and then I rented it out to the Loiva, which they allowed that traditionally Tinol Delos with Ne Loiva. They did that in order not to lock the door in front of Loiva. In other words, you don't want to discourage people from lending money. So they wanted to have some kind of assurance that they're going to get their investment back. Then that's fine. Chakra dummy. However, the Gemara says, v'lav milti, even that's no good, because even if shahye, even if you waited all those years, you still have, again, because you still have the problem, again, the problem with chakira, unlike an artist, is you're guaranteed X amount from the field per year. So if you do nachyaisa, fine, but if you're not doing nachyaisa, then you have a problem of ribbon. And that's the maskot.
And therefore,
that's no good.
It doesn't work.
Now we're going to start talking this next Mishnah and the Gemara on it. I don't know, we'll see how far we can get, and before everybody gets tired. I guess we'll see what we can manage. We're going to start talking about the concept of an iska, and eventually we'll get into the topic of heter iska. Basically, an iska is that I have money, you have a business, I'm going to invest my money in your business. Now the problem is, how do we look at that investment? If we're going to look at it as all pikadon, the problem is I'm taking a lot of risk. What happens, whether we consider you a shema chinam or shema sacher or even a shoyal or whatever, the point is there's always a case where you can be potter if something happens to it, and then I've lost my whole investment. On the other hand, if we consider it that I've lent you the money, then the problem is how are we allowed to divide the profits of it? Then you have a problem of ribbit. So therefore, what you do is,
so if it's a loan,
then you're not allowed to
pay back the exact amount that was loaned.
But we're saying that we're going to split the profits. How am I allowed to get the profits then?
So then you have a problem of ribbit.
So now what the Gemara tells us later on in the Masechta, the Gemara establishes what the Chachamim made the Takana is, when you make an iska like that, usually you consider half the money is considered a pikadon and half of it is considered a milva. So that way, at least you're guaranteed to get your half of the pikadon. You're guaranteed to get that back. Not the half of the milva, because the milva you're going to get back regardless. And on the other hand, you're able.
You invested
100. So we're saying 50 of it is going to be considered a pikadon, which therefore there's a chance you might end up losing it. $50 of it is going to be considered a milva, which you're going to get back regardless. And now, very good. On the part of the pikadon, you're able to get profits. If I deposit money by you, and it increases in value over time, then fine, I'm entitled to that increase.
Without being able
to. The problem is, though, you have a different issue. Then that's fine. You're able to split the profits. Then you have another issue you have to consider, though. The managing partner, the business person, not the investor, the other guy, is managing the half, which is the pikadon, investing it, buying stock with it, selling it or whatever, for the fact that you lent him the half, which is the milva. So there you have a different problem of ribis. You have a problem of that he's giving you a benefit. He's giving you a benefit because of the fact that you lent him money. So in order to avoid that, we're going to see in the Mishnah and in the Gemara that you have to pay him a salary. One way of avoiding that is you pay him a salary. If you pay him a salary, then he's doing it on behalf of the salary.
That's with the part that is considered halva.
The part that's considered a halva, right. The part that's considered a pikadosh. If you say that the part that's considered, he's going to be taking the whole 100 and investing it, right? He's going to be taking the whole 100 and buying merchandise with it and selling it and so forth. But remember, 50 of that is a pikadosh and 50 of it is a halva. If you say that if you don't pay him a salary for it, and you're just saying we'll split the profits evenly, what it amounts to is that he's managing, he's going and then taking that 50 of pikadosh and buying and selling and whatever with it and trying to increase as a favor to you for having lent him $50. And that would be also agar nefesh. That wouldn't be ribis d'oraisa.
If you share the profits on a pikadosh, that would be okay.
But you want the profits, right? Yeah. So if you're going to be splitting the profits and if you're going to be splitting the profits equally percentage wise based on the amount that's considered a milva and the amount that's considered a pikadosh, you have to also pay him a salary. And that salary, then he's working for his salary. He's not working because you did him a favor and lent him money. So the Mishnah says, "Ein meshivin chen v'ni l'machzit schar." You cannot set up a storekeeper where you're going to invest money for him. You're going to invest money with him. Or Rashi gives a different example, actually, So I'll provide the stock. I'll provide the food, for example. You'll go and sell it l'machzit schar, and we'll split the profit. You can't do that. Or give him money to buy Paris, where you're going to split the profits. The Gemara will explain why you need both cases. Unless you pay him like a worker. What we mean by like a worker, we'll see at the beginning of the Gemara. Similarly, we can't say that you'll arrange with somebody to use their chickens to incubate your eggs, same kind of idea. Rashi says because you're accepting the one who's going to be taking care of the eggs is taking half the responsibility. If the eggs get ruined, if the chicks die or whatever, so you also have the same problem: half milva, half pikadosh. So again, you have the same kind of issue. Or similarly, to figure out the value of calves or ponies, baby horses, half and half. Again, the same kind of thing. Right now, the animal is worth X amount. You're going to raise it for 2 years, let's say, and afterwards we'll split the profits. And if the animal dies, we'll split the losses. Same kind of thing. Unless you pay him for his work and for the food that he's giving to the animal.
What makes it different that you pay him?
Because then he's working for his pay. Then he's working for his salary. He's not working.
But he's still sharing.
That's fine.
Why is it fine?
Because then we said there's two problems. Number one, not two problems. We said that the problem with splitting the profits 50-50. No, so what we said is like this: if he's managing the pikadosh part because you lent him the halva part, that's ribis. That's he's giving you agar nefesh. On the other hand, if we were to say the whole thing is a milva, then you can't get any profits at all. So by making a half milva, half pikadosh, we've taken away the ribis d'oraisa problem. But we've created a ribis d'rabbanan problem. Why is he managing that half pikadosh because of the half milva? Pay him a salary, and that avoids that. He's not doing it because of the half milva. He's doing it because he's paying him a salary.
So if I'm paying him a salary, then he can share any profit.
No, then he still can share the profit.
Well, then it's still.
No, the storekeeper is allowed to share the profits. There's no ribis on his part. He's not receiving ribis. He's the one who received the loan in the first place. The problem is you, the investor, are you receiving ribis? But we're saying that no, because half of it is milva and half of it is pikadosh, you're receiving profits based on the half that's pikadosh, which you're perfectly entitled to. He's receiving the profits that are the half of the milva.
He's working for salary.
He's working for salary. Now, 50 of it is a milva. Any profits that are made from that 50, he gets to keep.
As a salary?
Not as a salary, as a separate thing. As a separate thing, as his profits, fine.
Right.
But in addition, I'm paying him a salary. The 50 that's pikadosh, I'm going to get the profits from that. Fine, no problem getting profits from pikadosh. That's not ribis.
Mm-hmm.
So that would work, except for the fact that you need the salary. Tosfos points out that before the expression was kapoyo botel, the difference is because, for example, a storekeeper who spends his whole day in the store, you need to pay him, as the Gemara will say, as if he was a worker who doesn't have a full-time job or whatever, as we'll see in the Gemara. Whereas over here, when it comes to taking care of animals, it's not a full-time thing. You feed them, you feed them, you give them water or whatever, and that's it. Yeah. However, you're allowed to accept baby calves and baby horses without any shumah, without specifying that we're going to split the profits and losses. Rashi says you can just say that if they die, you're not going to have to pay anything. If they stay alive and they grow, then we'll split the profits. That's allowed because then you, the investor, the original owner of the animals, have a chance. You're taking the chance on yourself that the whole thing may be lost, the whole investment may be lost if the animals die. From a gablanos and abshiyum mishaloshin, and in that case, the one who's taking care of them has to continue raising them until they are mishaloshim, which Rashi says means they're one third of their full growth. A different explanation that Mepharshim say is till they're 3 years old. But chamorah chetet ha'enes, and a donkey, you would have to raise it until it's old enough to carry a burden, and then at that point you're entitled to dissolve the partnership and say we'll each take half of their amount. So the Gemara says Tana, we learn in a Braisa, kapoyo bottle. When we say in the case of the storekeeper that you have to pay him like a poyo, means kapoyo bottle, like an idle worker. So my kapoyo bottle, what do you mean like an idle worker? It actually says he's not idle. He's running a store. It's hard work. It means like a worker who's idle from the kind of work from which he is idle. Now we learned back in Eilu Metzias, we learned a few different explanations on what that means. Rashi explains over here. And it means, let's say you have somebody who otherwise would have had to do a very hard job. Instead, like this, you're telling him you'll have an easier job, you'll run a store. How much of a pay cut would he be willing to do that? And that's what we consider kapoyo botel. We learned over there, we had other explanations. For example, we had the explanation of Ravena Hanano that we said, let's say a tailor, for example, you figure out how much would you take for a job when you have a lot of work to do versus how much would you take when there's nothing to do anyway, when nobody's bringing you any business anyway. If one person were to bring you something, you'd be willing to give them a discount, so at least you have business. That would be kapoyo botel. A few different explanations, and we're showing him what it means. Okay, the Gemara says it's tzricha. Now, the Mishnah had mentioned both cases, one where you gave him the actual payrus and one where you gave him money to buy payrus. Well, tzricha, we actually need both those cases. Because if we only said the case of a storekeeper where you give him fruit already to sell, you would say chen v'ni or desagel like a poyo bottle, then fine, in that case, it's enough to give him like a poyo bottle, the lesser amount. Mishum lo nafish tzricha, because he doesn't have that much tzricha. The fruit is already in his hands. He just has to sell it. But you would think if you gave him money to buy payers, the nafish tircha, where it's much more of a tircha, emolay sagi like a kapoyo bottle. Maybe just giving him a kapoyo bottle is not enough. Maybe you have to give him a full salary in order to
consider distribute.
That's what we're asking. In other words, maybe we would say that in that case, if you don't give him a full salary, maybe the reason why he's doing it is as ago neter. He's doing you a favor for the fact that you lend him money. And that would be awesome. The eton of moist lick off and payers. On the other hand, if it mentioned money to buy payers, have our minimum hostel who deboy kapoyo bottle. Fakert, you would say, okay, in that case, you have to pay him a salary kapoyo bottle. Mishum the nafish tircha, because he has a lot of tircha. Have a chenveni deloy nafish tircha. A chenveni who doesn't even have much tircha, because you already gave him the fruit. Afilu loy, aim a sagilid mashu ba'alma. Maybe you should not actually have to pay him an actual salary. Maybe just a mashu would be enough. Da afilu loy tovel imay elevatsir. Even if he just join you in a meal where you allowed him to dip some bread, for example, into fish juice with you. So we only ate with you one fig, which we will have a braisa that brings the opinion of Rabbi Yossi, of Rabbi Yehuda, who says that that's enough in general. You would think maybe that's considered a schar in the case where you gave him actual payers. Tzricha, and therefore the Mishnah has to clarify in both cases, you still have to give him a kapoyo bottle in both cases. In the one case, it's not too much. In the other case, it's not too little. Either way, that's the amount you have to give. That's why we have both cases in the Mishnah.
Okay.
So let's see if we can take another 5 minutes and run down the opinions on this real quick, at least. And then tell me Rabbanan on another third of the Amud.
Okay.
Kama Izi V'Tana Gerlin Milan Simon. This is a Simon for four Braises that the Gemara is going to quote in these days. Tana Rabbanan. Kama Hu Scharai. What is the Schar that you have to give the person, the storekeeper, let's say? Ben Merubo, Ben Muat, give it a mayor. Whether you give him a large salary or a small salary, that's enough, says Rameyer. So it can be Kapoya Bato, for example. Wait, Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, no, even if you only allowed him to dip with you in a dip, like we just said, or he only ate with you one fig, that's enough. He had some kind of benefit from you. Therefore, we can say it's, in other words, as if now he's willing to run the business as because you did him that. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, I mean, nice and nice chare mishalim. And Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says you have to give him his full salary. Not just by a bottle. So you have three opinions. You're not allowed to make a deal as far as figuring out the value. We talked in the Mishnah about figuring out the value of animals and giving them to a guy to raise for you. You're not allowed to do that with goats or with sheep, with ewes, or any other kind of animal that does not work for its keep. You can't do that for half and half. In other words, if it's an animal that works for its keep, for example, it's a cow, which eventually is going to start plowing or whatever, then fine, you can say, the fact that the Mishnah said you have to pay him a salary, fine, he gets the benefit, he gets plowing out of it, he gets work out of it or whatever. But animals that don't produce any work, you can't do that. You'd have to give him a salary.
Well, just a minimal salary.
Well, that's the three different opinions that we said. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you could do such an arrangement with goats, because after all, goats produce milk. You'll get milk out of them. You can also do the same thing with sheep, because you shear the wool off them, and also shotvos, when they walk through the river, a little bit of the wool comes off into the water, so you're able to take that. Umotos, and when it walks among the thorns, also a little bit of wool gets ripped off. You have all that. Similarly, you can do the same kind of thing with a chicken because it also a hen because it also produces eggs. Okay, the question is the Tanakama gives a cholov the Tanakama gives a cholov lois sipik scharamolo mezonai. Why indeed, according to the Tanakama, are the wool or the milk not enough to me schara molo mazone? Why do you need to pay him a separate salary on top of those? The reason is because of a chol of kolam le pligi. It's true. If it was talking to the actual regular amount of wool, if the owner of the animal is willing to say, fine, you can keep all the wool or you can keep all the milk or whatever, sure, there's no machlokas. Of course that would be allowed. Ki pligi benisuvi betosri. The machlokas is, what if he says, we're going to split the milk. However, you will be entitled to the whey, the liquid that comes out of the milk after you make butter out of it, for example. You'll be entitled to that extra amount. Or toisri, which is the little bits, when it comes to the regular wool that we shear off the animal, we're going to split that. But the wool that comes off in the water or on the thorns, that you can keep. So therefore, the machlokas Tanakama savalak Reb Shimon ben Yochai, the Tanakama of this last braisa holds like Reb Shimon ben Yochai in the previous braisa. He says you have to pay him a full salary, and these things are not enough to amount to a full salary. Any less than that, you have a problem of agar neter. Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, Savala Kabua, whereas Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda holds like his father, Rabbi Yehuda, that even a small amount, even if it's just you shared a meal with him, or you gave him one fig, that would be enough. And therefore, by the same logic, this little amount, the whey, or the little pieces of loose wool, or whatever, is enough to be considered his schar. So this second braisa fits well with the first one. The halacha, by the way, is like the opinion that says that ben meruba ben mua. It doesn't have to. It can't be only gregeras achas. But according to most poskim, the halacha is that ben meruba ben mua give it a mayor, because your mayor is the tana of our mishnah. Stam mishnah to mayor.
Right.
And therefore, you can find in your average heter iska that you find nowadays, the average heter iska form, you'll find, for example, that it says that the investor, which is the lender, is paying the guy a salary of $1 per year, let's say, or $1 per month, or whatever, a symbolic salary, but that's enough. Then you can say he's working because of that salary rather than because you lent him the money.
That would be make the heter
iska. And that's part of what goes into a heter. That's part of
the salary part. I didn't fully see why it removes the union of ribis.
Because without a salary, you lent him $50. You also gave the cousin to him of $50.
Nice.
You lent him $50. You also gave him a pecudin of $50.
Right.
We're saying like this. The part that you lent him is the part, any profits that come from the part you lent him, he will get to keep. That way he's not giving you ribbis on that. The part that the pecudin, any profits that come from that, he's giving to you, which is fine. You can make profits on a pecudin. But why is he working? Mainly he's working with the amount you lent him. Okay, you lent it to him. He wants to make profits. Why is he working with the half that you gave him as a pecudin? Why is he investing that? Why is he buying and selling merchandise with that instead of just leaving it in a safe and saying, look, it's a pecudin. You gave it to me as a pecudin. I'll return you the exact amount, and that's it. Bechora, he's working with that because you lent him the other half.
Right.
That's agor nefer. He's giving you something for having lent him money.
And if you give him a salary on that.
If you give him a salary, then you say he's not working with the pecudin half because you lent him the other half. He's working with the pecudin half because you're paying him a salary. He's doing it like any other kind of salaried worker, and therefore that works. So again, we have the three different opinions: how much the salary has to be.
Well,
according to the vast majority of poskim, and this is how it's passed in Shulchan Aruch, the halacha is as long as it's a minimum salary, even a dollar. And that's
what was the opinion?
Most that was the opinion we said of Rav Meir, because we say that the halacha sam mishnah of Meir, and therefore that means that
So the salary is for the pikkurim.
Salary takes care of that he's doing the pecudin.
You can get a salary for pecudin.
Sure.
He's
like a shem asafa. Sure, he's a shem asafa.
And the alva,
he's keeping all the profits from that.
He's keeping all the profits.
He returns you the actual amount of the alva. At the end, when the partnership
is... If you give me an alva, I can keep all the profits on the alva?
Sure.
That's okay.
But anytime, what are you usually borrowing money for? You're not borrowing money necessarily to buy groceries. You're borrowing money because you want to invest it. Yeah. So therefore, and any profits you're going to keep. That's not ribbis. That's the opposite of ribbis. Yeah. You're returning me eventually the original $50. Yeah. So therefore, fine. At the end, when we dissolve the partnership, you're returning me my entire 100 plus half of the profit.
So how do you? Yeah. So you can make the salary minimum.
Yeah.
And that's the halacha, but you can increase it also.
You can make the salary more, sure. But
more.
There's also the other issue, which is how we divide the profits and losses. We're going to learn tomorrow, Bez Hashem. Another way of doing it is you don't pay him a salary, but you make it that the amount of profit that he will get is larger than the amount of profit you will get, or that the amount of losses that he will have to cover is less than the amount that you will have to cover. Those kinds of arrangements are also allowed. So if you have, in other words, again, if we consider that the iska is half halva, half pikadin, we can say, for example, that fine, you will be if there's a loss, then we can say that we'll see in the Gemara tomorrow. You can say, for example, that if there's a loss, instead of having to cover half of the whole thing, in other words, think of it. Never mind profits. What if the whole 100 gets lost? The managing partner, the chenveni or what have you, is going to be responsible for half of it, right? Half of it is a milva. He's going to be responsible for it regardless. The other half of it is pikadin. It was lost. It was stolen. There was an onus. Whatever. I'm a shem asafer. I'm potter from onusim. So therefore, in an ordinary case like that, you, the investor, stand to lose up to 50% of your investment. What we can do instead is we can say, for example, that instead, if there's a loss, I will eat 2/3 of it. So if there's a loss, for example, not only, if the whole 100 is lost, not that you'll have to repay me 50, but rather that you'll repay me 33. And then if there's a profit, then we'll split it 50-50. That's also allowed without paying him a salary, because then he's doing it on behalf of the fact that you're giving him extra. Which is fine. That's fine. That's the equivalent of
a Karen, basically.
Yeah. Or likewise, you can do the other way around. You can say that if there's a loss, you're going to have to cover 50% of it. But if there's profits, I'm only going to get 1/3 of it, or let's say anything less than a half, whatever. That also works. Same idea. Then he's not managing the pecudin part because you lent him money. He's managing the pecudin part because he stands to gain from it.
And that's also
allowed. So that's the thing. There's two ways of doing it, which we'll learn in the Gemara tomorrow. That's a shame. So your typical Hefter Iska doesn't use that second method, because usually the guy would want to have all the profits. He'd never want to have half the profits. Half the profits, whatever. So usually the way they arrange it is using the nois and lois chore, that you give him a salary, and again, the salary can even be a dollar, but whatever, it's a salary, and therefore he's working on behalf of that.
It can be as much as you want. Basically.
It can be sure. It can be much more than that if you want.
$1 million, and you expect $500,000 in return, he could give a salary of $200,000.
Sure, you can do whatever you want. Yeah.